I'm excited to introduce these three 20-minute speakers this morning. Our first speaker is kind of proof positive that it doesn't matter what age you are, whether you're 18 or 69 or 70 or 80. If we come in here and we suit up, show up, and we show a bunch of willingness and have an open-mindedness, and to realize that I can't do this by myself. I need the help. I proved beyond a reasonable doubt I couldn't do this sober thing and living thing on my own. If I could have, if I could have fixed myself by myself, I would have done it long before I got here. So that proves to me I can't do it by myself. So this young man suited up, showed up with a bunch of willingness and a bunch of energy to go do this thing, and he's a living proof that this thing works no matter what age you are. So with that, I'm going to give you Griffin W. Come on up, Griffin.
Hey, guys. Griffin Williams, alcoholic addict. Bill Barnes saved my life. I didn't think I'd get emotional up here, but a lot of nervousness leads to emotion sometimes for me. I've tried everything to get sober. I've tried every outlet, and nothing worked. The only thing that worked for me was doing the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and becoming willing enough to take suggestions, because my best thinking landed me in a lot of bad places. So, I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict, and I was born that way. My dad's an alcoholic, his dad's an alcoholic, his dad's an alcoholic, the line just keeps going. It's a genetic disease from what I've been told. So I grew up in an alcoholic family. I started sneaking drinks from my dad's liquor when I was probably 7 or 8 years old, just sitting there drinking his adult drinks. Because they were adult beverages. He called them his adult drink. And I wanted to be an adult. I wanted to grow up. So I'd just sit there and take little sips of them when he wasn't paying attention. And when he caught me, I would fake spit it out and be like, "Ew, I thought it was my Sprite or something," you know? And yeah, he caught me a couple times. But he went off to his first rehab when I was 12 or 11 or something like that. And then alcohol was out of the picture. So I had to find something new. So I transferred over to, Outside Issues, AA meeting, at a very early age. Started smoking some weed. So my dad was out of the picture for about 6 years of my life. Lots of change. Parents got divorced. Just a weird time for me. And it was really when I was starting to really use drugs and alcohol as a outlet to make myself feel different, because I didn't know how to properly feel. So I'm an alcoholic. I know I keep saying that, but sometimes I feel like I've never shared my story before, and I feel like I have to sit up here and convince you guys I'm an alcoholic, you know, but hopefully something I say convinces you, but I just know I am. I've smashed the idea that I could drink or drug normally. It's not an option for me. I'm either all in on recovery or I'm all in on drinking and drugging. There's no in between for me. My mom moved to this house, and this is really where my drug and alcohol addiction really picked up, was when my mom moved to this house that had a little garage back house. So I had my own little house to myself as a freshman in high school, drinking and drugging away, bong by the bedside table kind of deal at at 15 years old. I had a fake ID at like 13. You know, I was going out to bars as a freshman in high school. Like, it's just not normal stuff. Normal people don't do that. It's just funny to think about. I mean, those were the good times though, but they quickly turned bad. So I went off to college. I went in a fraternity at Alabama, and
roll tide.
So I went off to the fraternity, and in my mind, you know, the big book says I had arrived. You know, in my mind, I was like, I'm here, I'm ready. Like, this is what I was born for. I was born for fraternity and partying, and this is all I've ever known. So I had arrived. That arrival came to a halt quick. I got arrested the first day of college for selling weed in my dorm room. Roll tide, yeah. So, I was arrested first day. I thought I was invincible before that, but turns out I'm not. That started the recovery journey. I didn't want to be sober. I was put on probation. And that's really where I saw how bad it was. You know, I spent a month sober, couldn't stay sober. You know, I tried everything there was. Like, I will drink and do drugs no matter what. Like, nothing comes in the way of that besides a higher power and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, I am prone to drink. Everything leads me back to a drink and drugs. It was just a revolving door of different probations. Probation that should have lasted 3 months ended up lasting a year and a half because I just couldn't stay sober. I tried everything there was with my own devices, you know, not AA, nothing like that. So I eventually, you know, I put on a lot of weight. I was in a deep depression. It was a rough time. You know, almost worse than my worst using days. You know, an alcoholic and an addict without any crutch. It was a bad place to be. I eventually got off probation, went back out for about 4 months, and then crossed that line that I said I was never going to cross. And started doing some things that I said I was never going to do. And that landed me in my first rehab. So, go off to rehab. My dad's an addict. He went to like, you know, I don't know, 10 different rehabs. So I'm sitting there, I'm like, it's over for me. My run's over. I can't put my mom and my sister through what he did, you know? I tried honestly to get sober. I did everything that I thought I needed to do. So I went to rehab. I moved out to a sober living in Montana to get away. I started going to AA meetings regularly. I got a sponsor, and then I hit the fourth step. And I was like, I'm done. No, I'm not doing any more work. I'm not writing the inventory. Hell no. So I didn't finish the steps. And I stopped going to meetings. And I drank. It's like, so simply put in front of me. Hey, go to meetings. Do the steps. Continue to do this thing daily. It's a daily reprieve. Just do it daily and you'll stay sober and like live a good life. And I saw all of that for a glimpse there when I was doing it. And I stopped because life came back. And I was like, I'm done with it. I'm not going to finish the steps. So I went back out because I'm prone to drink. And there's two solutions to my alcoholism. It's the spiritual steps in the program of AA. That's one solution. And then there's feeding it with alcoholism and drugs. Like, there's no in-between for me. I can sit there miserable and sober, quote-unquote, but that's not much better than anything else. I'm still living in my character defects, hurting other people around me when I'm in that state of mind. I relapsed. My dad drives out to Montana because I somehow got him on the phone in my blackoutness. He comes and picks me up. We drive back to Atlanta, and that's where this go-around started. I got connected into some amazing groups. Some guys that, like, truly saved my life. I didn't know how bad it got. I didn't know how bad it really was until I got sober enough to see. When you're living in a fraternity house and your fraternity friends are saying, hey, you need to look at yourself. What you're doing is not right. Like, that's a wake-up call, man. Like, come on. I'm not normal. I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict. And I'm happy to be one. So I started working the steps, and Bill got me working the steps quick. I had that pocket of willingness that I had the first time I started working the steps, and I let it slip away, but this time I was not going to. I completely surrendered. I completely taken that first step, and I admitted to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic and an addict, and that's really what got me over the hump of being able to work the steps. So I worked the steps quickly and efficiently. I mean, I think I finished them in 2 or 3 months. I mean, hard work, nonstop recovery into sober living. Just all in on recovery. That's all my focus was. And it's still my number one focus today, because if I put anything else in front of recovery, I'm doomed. I need to remember to put my sobriety first. So I worked the steps, and things started happening. Like, great things started happening. I started being able to sit in a room by myself without music or any other noise and be content. Just little gifts like that that I didn't know were possible. I didn't think I could ever reach that point. Because I spent 2 years sober, quote unquote, you know, clean. I don't know what you call it, but, you know, with all these things going on in my head, and I was just not properly healing my alcoholism. So once I started, and Bill says the medicine, right? Yeah. Like, I have this disease and alcoholism, and I've been feeding it with the wrong medicine my whole life, with alcohol and drugs. And the right medicine is the Alcoholics Anonymous and the steps. And that made so much sense to me. I was like, wow, like, that's so right. I did the steps. I got a home group in AA and CA. And I just went to work. And really, really just stayed open-minded, surrendered, became completely willing to do whatever anyone told me. I call 3 guys a day. I pray every morning and every night. I read the daily ponderables every morning. There's certain things that I can't not do every day. And through calling the 3 guys, which I really struggled with at the beginning, I've formed like these relationships with these guys that I would never think I'd be friends with, you know? And now I call them and we talk about real stuff, you know, real life shit. And it just helps so much. So the steps have given me so much. I've started a career. This time, I've lost 120 pounds since getting sober. these are all material things, you know. I started a job, lost the weight, went back to school, you know, other things, I don't know. Good things happen, right? When you're doing good things happen. And that's all the material stuff that comes with doing good acts, I guess you could say. And then these other things, like the serenity and just the contentness and all these little gifts that we get, like taking a... I remember Ricky last year was talking about taking that first solid shit in like 5 years, and I was like, that's so relatable. Oh my God. Like, oh my God, I can't remember the last time, and I sent one of my sponsees that speaker tape, and he listened to it, and he was like, that's like the one thing he got out of it, is the main thing he got out of it was the, taking a solid poop for the first time in like 5 years, and I was like, wow, like, that's just something that normal people don't have to deal with. Normal people take the solid poops all the time, you know? And, so yeah, there's just so many, like, little gifts that keep coming. And, I mean, I don't really know what else to say. This is very, very short. I got 5 minutes left, so I'm going to give the rest of the guys some time. I'm really honored to be asked to do this. I signed my name down to speak at a meeting, like, not thinking I would get picked at all. But, of course, like, one of my good friends in my home group is on the committee, and he was like, oh, I'm picking him. And he, like, shot me a text, like, yeah, you're speaking. And I was like, oh, damn. But I'm seriously, this is, like, such a spiritual experience, this whole rock, like, whoever, I love this thing. Like, coming out here, a bunch of, like, 400 guys getting together, all with a common purpose and a common goal to stay sober and help the next alcoholic, right? I mean, it's powerful. It's powerful when you're sitting around a room, like, saying the Lord's Prayer with 400 other guys. You can feel it everywhere you go, you know? You feel it in the cafeteria in the morning. You feel it everywhere. It's something that I didn't think I could feel, you know what I mean? I didn't think I would have a relationship with a higher power. I didn't come here for that. I came here to get sober, right? And now I have a relationship with a God that I don't understand at all. And I don't even know what he looks like, what goes on, what his intentions are for me, but I know I pray. And I know I'm trying to connect to it, and it helps so much. Yeah, I don't know what else to say about that. I'm gonna wrap it before I mess something up, but thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Griffin. That was excellent. When I come to these things and I listen to meetings and I pay attention and I participate, I get to hear these nuggets. And, you know, for those that are here for the last rock and got to hear Ricky speak, I've come up with a new term. It's called the golden nugget. The nugget is a piece of information that helps me change my perspective on how to look at the world. And for those that didn't hear Ricky talk about Earl last rock, ask somebody about Earl and it will help you. Our next guy is, you know, part of the power of our fellowship and how we reach out is the H&I meetings, the hospitals and institutions, people going out into those meetings and touching people that are in the institutions. Our speaker last night talked about how that's how he got here. And our next speaker, I believe, is the same thing. And so I'm really looking forward to hearing what Ben has to say. With that, I'll give you Ben.
Good morning. My name is Ben. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is August 24th, 2011. I have a home group in East Marietta. I have a sponsor that knows he's my sponsor, and he has a sponsor that knows he's a sponsor. And I have some sponsees that I'm not sure if I'm their sponsor. So kind of how it goes. But 20 minutes, 6 hours, it doesn't matter. We can only scratch the surface. So I'm going to just try to focus on the surface here and kind of jump straight to the point. So I grew up 30 minutes east of Akron. I found Alcoholics Anonymous in a Georgia State prison. My entire life was devoted to mind-altering substances. My parents split up at an early age. Family was broken. I had a little brother. We traveled all around. We did not have anything really rooted. And at 5 years old, my mother got involved with a man who was very physically abusive. And he decided that he was going to teach us how to get high at that age. So 5 years old is really when it started. I don't know what life was like before that. All I knew is that drugs and alcohol were as detrimental to my way of life as breathing and eating. It was just something that I've always done. So I didn't really know how to love. I didn't know how to love people. I didn't know how to be afraid. I didn't know how to get over fear. I didn't know how to do anything. I knew how to get mad and drink. I knew how to get be fearful and drink. And I think that I always was looking for something to make me feel better, right? I didn't really have the role models in life. And so at a very early age, I started seeking other people to kind of, to cure that. A lot of women in my life, I've got 5 kids. I have 4 baby moms. And I kept looking at them to be the thing to save me, right? I didn't know that the alcoholism was the problem. I didn't know learning how to live or not knowing how to live life on life's terms was the problem. I never considered sobriety as a solution. It just, I tried the different things, you know. I tried snorting cocaine instead of smoking crack. I tried beer instead of liquor. I tried the clear stuff. I mean, I tried the opiates, you know, but honestly, I was like one of those guys that really liked things that made my heart go boom, and I liked women in my life that would clean up my mess. I guess I had a little bit of abandonment issue, you know, a lot of deep resentment toward my mother as a result of the life and the upbringing that I had. And so I would take hostages along the way. I mean, I've got the DUIs, you know, I've got a rap sheet as long as dude last night. I'm not going to one-ump them, but it's kind of short. And it's just, it's really just how it is, you know. And I just kept doing that, you know, and I would get by. People always told me you had potential, and I went to high school with the local judge's son. And for years, it was just time served, time served, time served, girls bailing me out, folks bailing me out, all this stuff, until I started getting into the narcotics, and then all of a sudden, I was no longer a misdemeanor guy, I was a felony guy. And I remember a guy in a court saying, oh man, I don't even waste time with misdemeanors, I'm straight felonies. And I was like, what a douchebag. That's who I became. I became that guy. But in the midst of having all these kids with all these different women in these different states, I kept thinking that I was going to be the father that I didn't have, but I didn't know how to be that father. The type of father I was the one that crawled through the window in the middle of the night to rob my rent money. Well, my daughter found me, and I kiss her and send her back to bed and tell her I love her, but I actually have no idea how to love her, because if I did, I wouldn't be doing that. So I tried to imagine what life was going to be like going to the bar and telling the bartender, just Coke. Or going to the trap house and being like, nah, I'm just here to kick it. I never thought that I would have to change where I hung out. I never thought that I would have to do something different with my life. So August 24th, 2011, well, I ended up with a string of felonies, and those felonies I managed to squeak by on some probation. And then I quickly got some more felonies, and that probation officer was in a different county, and she was pissed that I wasn't in prison and said that she'd see to it that I was. That kind of goes against the plans I got, you know. Plans are not go to jail. I'm like a 60-day, 90-day guy. This lady's talking about putting me away. So I did what I did, and I manipulated someone, and I got a bus ticket, and I took off to Georgia, and I thought I was going to hide here, and you were only going to drag me back to the state of Ohio in a box. That was my deal. Well, I quickly showed up with me, and I ended up with some felonies here. And August 24th, 2011, the police are knocking on the door, and I thought, that's weird that they're here. I was coming out of a blackout. I had just kicked in a door the night before, went in and robbed some things out of a house. And I look up as I'm sitting there in the back of that cop car, And I see her, my girlfriend, standing there holding our daughter. And something was different this time. I didn't think, oh my God, is she going to leave me? Is she going to be there for me? When am I going to see her again? The first thought I had in my mind was, I can't believe I don't have to figure out how to not use today. That was very short-lived, and I quickly wanted to kill myself once all my jailhouse lawyers told me how long I was looking at. So I ended up there. I didn't have a bond. And I was sitting there, and I was waiting on sentencing. They gave me 3 years. And I hear this thing called AA, AA. And so I signed up for AA. And it's so funny, Damon, you're sitting right there. Damon was one of the gentlemen that brought H and I work into Cobb County Adult Detention Center, him and a gentleman named Marshall, and I think a guy named Rich. I don't know. Rich said some stuff I didn't like, life's better than my wildest dreams. And I thought, how animated. You know, I couldn't understand that. I didn't know what that meant. But I kept on with what I was keep doing, and I went, and they shipped me out. They sent me down the road, and when I got down the road, they told me I could get credits for AA, and I got papers, you know, and so I didn't really understand what AA was. I felt a draw to it the way I felt a draw to a preacher on a Sunday who was talking right at me, that conviction, that invitation. That never worked for me. It was always good for a moment, but by Sunday at 1, I'd forgotten everything. So that conviction never stuck. When I got shipped out of that camp, I ended up in a county camp up in North Georgia, Hall County, and a guy named Pat came in with H and I work. And Pat was successful and well-spoken, and I thought, I have a lot in common with Pat. It was the strangest thing when I say that right now, but Pat was willing to take me through the steps, and I wasn't really sure that I was an alcoholic. I was really just trying to look good for the parole board. And so he says, well, we're going to read the big book, and we only get an hour a week. So he told me to go ahead, and I saw over 550 pages, and I thought, that's a lot of pages, man. I didn't have anything else to do, but 550 pages seemed like a mountain to me. So he told me to read the first 164, so I did. And then it was the second time I was reading the first 164, and I saw the bottom of page 37, and it talked about a chronic jaywalker. And I don't know why that day, but the words jumped off the page right at me, and it was my moment where I thought, oh my God. I substituted the jaywalking with alcohol. I substituted it with drugs. I substituted it with women. I substituted it with my kids. I thought everything was my solution. I couldn't get it out of my mind, and I said, oh my God, I got it, and I don't want to be this. Coming to step one was not easy for me, because I didn't think I was an alcoholic, because I thought it was just my lifestyle. I thought I could do it in some way, shape, or form. And I'll tell you, when I ended up in that prison and everybody left me, that's what I thought, they left me, right? I later come to believe and find out that I pushed them away. And it was exactly what I needed. Because if she would have answered the phone, God. He would have answered the phone, God. Parole officer, God. I was looking for something and I didn't have it. And that's what made me available to be able to see that on the bottom of page 37. I needed the time, I needed the space, I needed no distraction. I was constitutionally incapable of being honest until it jumped out and hit me in the face. So I became willing to do whatever it took. But I wasn't completely willing on step two and step three. I didn't want anything to do with the God, because that conviction that I got on Sundays was always short-lived. And I just didn't know how to put my faith in that. So what I ended up doing was I just jumped right into step four. And I got stuck. And my sponsor said, boy man, you're really angry. How's your prayer life? And I said, it's for weak people without a hustle. It's praying hands or begging hands. I'm not begging. And he said, good. So every day for 2 weeks, you can get on your knees in the morning and at night, and you're going to pray for all those people that you're mad at. And you're going to pray for them by name. And I said, man, I said, who do I pray to? And he said, pray to my God. So I got on my knees and I said, dear Pat's God. And I did this, and I had been making fun of guys in the prayer circle. I said, chain gang, Jesus ain't going to save you, man. We're all on the recidivism list. We're all coming back. And I got down on my knees and I started to pray. And after a few days, I started to mean it. And when I started to mean it, I was all in. That's when I became all in. I became all in and completely willing to do a fearless and searching and thorough inventory, but I wasn't willing to share all of it while I was still in prison because I was afraid maybe he worked for them. And I didn't want to do a confession list. But the first two columns were very easy. What I was pissed at and why was very easy. That list went fast. But I mean, I started putting people on there that I probably didn't need it, like people that walk in front of the car slow, going to the grocery store, and you know, through the parking lot. You know what I mean? It's like, dude, treat it like a street. I got to use the turn signal. What's up? So, but anyways, it was like that. And then I saw those other columns that I had to do, and I was like, man, that's going to be a lot of writing. Maybe I can amend this down and get to the ones that are important. And so I worked those steps, and step six and step seven kind of looked like a flyover step for me. So I was a kind of nod step, you know, I read them and I wrote out my list, and then I got transferred to a camp that didn't have anything. I didn't know how I was going to live in the real world when I got out, but I had gotten out shortly after that. I'd done most of my time to the door. They put me on parole. I paroled out to my dad's house, who started selling weed. And I said, you know, I'm on parole, right? Like, they could come by anytime. And so I did what I did in AA and when I was in prison. And as I went and I found a sponsor. So I bounced around for a couple of years. I wasn't sure, do I belong in AA? Do I belong in NA? Do I belong in CA? Because I arguably fit into all of them. So I found a home in AA. And I found a sponsor in AA, and we went through those first sets of steps again. And I got up through step four and step five, and step six and step seven weren't nod steps for him. We worked those out of 12 and 12. I worked every step out of the big book except six and seven. And when he had a list of questions for me, and one of them was, what character defect do I still exalt in? So I had to look up exalt. And I said, oh man, this is worse than my fourth step. Because the fourth step, I was able to just blow it off as that's the past. I don't live that way anymore. Step six, that's what I'm doing right now. And that one was a little terrifying. But we persevered and we worked through it. And when I got out of prison here, I was still wanted in another state. I decided that, like I said, I took off, I came down here. I had felony warrants out for me. I spent 7 years of my life as a fugitive trying to hide out. And as I worked my way through these steps here, I outgrew my recovery bubble. Boy, it blew up fast. Things started coming. Opportunities started to take place in my life, but I didn't have a driver's license, and I had a lot of things to take care of. In my little recovery bubble here, I had the opportunity to be a walking big book, and people that I used to drink and use with, started wondering if Ben could do it, could we do it? I'll talk about two of those people. One of those people is one of the daughters to my, one of the mothers to my daughter. And as a result, she decided to get into the program. And the other one was my longest running buddy, and that was my little brother. And I had the opportunity to take him to his first AA meeting. So I'm getting to do 12-step work before I've even gotten rid of the wreckage of my own past. I decided to ask this girl to marry me, and she said, not until you get those warrants taken care of. I knew it was coming, so what did I do? I called the clerk of courts in Youngstown, Ohio, and I asked them who my original attorney was, because I was too blitzed when I was there the first time to catch his name. I got an attorney, and he asked me, he said, when's your sobriety date? And I said, August 24, 2011. And he said, all right, I'll work with you. And that was important to him. And he said it was important to him that he knew that I knew when I was sober, because otherwise I was probably lying. He said, anyone that doesn't know isn't telling the truth. And I thought that was very interesting. So any of you that don't know when your sobriety date is, you might want to figure one out. So what I did was I called an attorney and we set it up. And I needed to do this because the ninth step says I make direct amends wherever possible. Not when it's convenient. Not if they show up where I'm at. but wherever possible. And I had 3 kids in the state of Ohio, I had 2 in the state of Georgia, and there was a part of me that was empty and missing. And I thought that I could get through without that. My brother had 6-7 months sober at the time. We flew up there, and I walked into a courthouse. And I sat there in that lobby, and I prayed, God grant me the serenity over and over and over again. And I said, if you let me out of here today, I'll never go back. And if you don't let me out of here today, I'm already free. And the serenity just hit the floor. It was a puddle. I got up in that courtroom, and I stood there, and for the first time in my life in an open court, I spoke, so I'm glad you got to do it here. And I got the opportunity to tell my story and tell the truth to a judge. I had a judge, my attorney, prosecutor, a bailiff, and a probation officer. And I had my newcomer brother, and we had no idea what was about to happen. And I told my story to that judge, and that judge got up from behind and came down and shook my hand and told me, congratulations. And she let me walk out of there that day. I went, and I was high on that. I could not believe it. My brother and I, we said, where are we going to go? And I said, take me to the biggest building you can find. I got a strip of photos of me and my brother with goofy photos at a mall in one of those little photo booths. Man, I felt so alive. I still had a lot of wreckage, though, that I needed to take care of. And so I decided that maybe I need to go take care of these misdemeanor warrants in the other county. So I went and did that. And then I said, man, I'm on a roll. These were amends that I swore I'd never make. I was never going to go back there. And next thing you know, I'm in the child support office, and I'm making that amends. And that amends right there opened the door to my children. And I had the opportunity to learn how to let them come to me. And so I started paying child support and had the opportunity to make an amends to my ex-wife. I had the opportunity to make an amends to my oldest daughter. I had the opportunity to be at the wedding and be announced as her father. And this is a little girl that I used to tell that I love as I was going back out the window. I'm a grandfather today. From doing 9-step work, I get to be a part of that. It's not just a title, it's something I am. I had another daughter, because they were spread out. And she was in a very physical, she was in a relationship with her mother that where her mother was getting physically abused. And it was taking place in front of my daughter. And I was able to walk into a courtroom in Cobb County, pro se, and go for emergency legitimation papers. I was able to fight for emergency custody, and as a 5-time felon that was once a fugitive before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, or before Alcoholics Anonymous got to me, I walked into that courtroom, and that judge gave me custody of that little girl. And I drove to Richmond, Virginia that day. They wanted me to put a credit card on file to rent a car, and I only had a $300 limit and a shitty credit score. Dang, I almost made the podium without cussing. Anyways, I didn't have a good credit score, and I didn't know, so we ran the card anyways. And they said, yeah, it's good, you can go. And I said, what the? I found out my credit card the same day I got custody of my daughter increased my limit $2,000. So I drove straight to Richmond, Virginia with a set of papers that said that I am allowed to have my daughter. And I called those police, and those police had me surrounded in downtown Richmond. And for the first time in their life, they weren't there for me. And they went inside that hotel, and they grabbed my daughter out. And they said to me, she said to me, thank you. Thank you. She asked me to come get her. I told her I would, and I fought for her. And she said, thank you. That daughter just turned 18. She's getting ready to graduate high school. And that girl that was standing there holding my baby at the top of the driveway that I wasn't thinking about is my wife today. She works a solid program. She's arguably one of my greatest spiritual advisors. Some of us just get it a little quicker than others. But if we stick around long enough, it will happen. I had a son. He was a little argumentative, and he was my last holdout. And when I finally got the opportunity to make an amends to him, I asked my sponsor, what do I do? What if he wants to fight me? And he said, good. This is what you want. You want a relationship with your son. This is what you got to do. And today I get to give him all sorts of business advice on how to start a business. So I've been able to get to be a mentor to him. But again, this is 20 minutes. This could be a 6-series, mini-series, and only scratch the surface of the world. That's what's inside the world. That's what's inside the world. That happens when those pages come to life. And I just want to say that I'm really grateful to be here. And I met my sponsor here. And he's here right now. And I just want to thank you guys and encourage you to make the most of this. Stay open-minded and keep trudging the road. Thank you.
Many thanks, Ben. I talked about nuggets earlier, you know, and if I pay attention when people are sharing, whether it's in a meeting or a speaker meeting, I get to hear these nuggets, and one of the nuggets I got from you was being available for recovery. If I'm not available for recovery, I'm not gonna get sober. So, thanks, Ben. That was great. Our next speaker is a guy that's here in Atlanta. He decided he needed to go to Florida. Then he decided he needed to come back to Georgia. And we're happy to have him. And I'm looking forward to hearing what Dave has to say. Thanks.
Oh, my goodness. Hi, I'm Dave Anderson, and I am an alcoholic. Card carrying. I grew up in Maine. I'm sorry, I got down here as fast as I could. I absolutely detested the taste and the smell of alcohol. I could not understand why anybody would do that to their body. And when I joined the Army, I made up for lost time. And you know, I just drank to go along with folks. I didn't have any idea that I had a tolerance that allowed me to drink a whole lot. So I went to Vietnam, and then I got interested in all kinds of other ways to go sideways. And I did a lot of that. I got out of the Army. I was a cook in McDonald's in North Carolina. And I realized my high school dreams were not going to come true, not being a cook in McDonald's. So I decided to join the Navy. And when I joined the Navy, I loved the Navy. I had a beard. I didn't have to shave it off. I could just keep it. I started flying again because I flew in the Army and I flew in the Navy. So I was real, I was good to go. But in 81, the Navy got real good at making marijuana charges stick. So it became a way to just snuff out a career if you got caught doing that. So I quit. I quit in 81. My sobriety date is July 25th, 1983. That's how long it took for my drinking to absolutely take over. The way I was raised was my dad was an engineer, so he would come home, he would sit in his chair. Mom would call him for dinner. He'd go have dinner, sit in his chair, watch TV, and go to bed. Get up early in the morning and do the same thing. In other words, he had the emotional availability of a fence post. Dear old dad was not there. And my mom, on the other hand, she had a pretty rough life when she was being raised. And she visited violence upon me. And a lot of it. I still don't like hairbrushes. So the thing is, she... Between her and my dad, I had absolutely no idea what boundaries were. I didn't know what they were. I certainly didn't have any. And none were practiced on me. So the result of that is my drinking. I was a very violent person. When you're drinking, you're 10 feet tall, right? Unfortunately, I was violent to everyone, including my family. 1983, I just got too famous. I couldn't talk myself out of trouble. I'm still in the Navy. Got too famous, couldn't talk my way out of it. The Navy basically gave me a simple choice, either get sober or go home. And by this time, I was 10 years into my career. I knew I was going to make it a career because I had a son that I had to pay child support on. And if I'm going to start from working as a cook at McDonald's, that's not going to be... So I knew in the Navy... In the military, I knew I could afford to do what I needed to do. So here's the deal. By the way, July 25th, 1983 is 36 years later from July 25th, 1947 when I was born. I came in keeping it real simple. I got my birthday, I got my anniversary. Yeah, my 36th birthday was. I don't know if any of you have seen it, but you know what the red and blue light show on the living room ceiling is? It's the cop car outside. And that was the last time I got to see that. They asked my wife, do you want to press charges? And for some unknown reason, she said no. I asked her later why, and she said, because I love you. It turns out that we were both doing the best we knew how with that. But, you know, my idea of love was what I saw in Hollywood, which is fake. My last drink was that evening. I had to go see the people I didn't want to see. You know, in the civilian world, I guess that's the EAP, but for in the Navy, it's the counselors. You got to go see the counselors, and they got to. I was sent to this guy, Pappy Burnham, and he was known to be just a walking hard ass. He's smaller than me, just a walking hard ass. And when I walked into his office, he took one look at me, and he got gentle. He just got gentle with me and said, "You know, yeah, it looks like you." You need to get some help. So I went off and I auditioned for treatment. I had the three guys sitting there going, why should we send you to treatment? Well, because I got a career that I want to maintain and I just want you to let me know I'm out of trouble and life will go on well. Which is not what I said. What I accidentally said was the absolute truth, because when I get drunk, I hurt my family. So I went they said, okay, you can go to treatment. But first, you got to do six. You got to get this list signed. You got to go to AA for a while. So I went to AA in Millington, Tennessee, and the people there got my attention. They talked about themselves, and they talked about the kind of things I was doing, and they talked about it with authority. They knew what they were talking about. And when I got to the point, I would start looking around the room, and I'd look at this little old lady, and she would talk about being knee-walking, snot-slinging, commode-hugging drunk with authority. So I believed it. And when I came to understand, it took me a little while to clear the alcohol out of my brain, and I came to understand that I used to live life by three rules. Life sucks, God is inherently unfair, and this will never, ever change. Ever. A friend of mine told me later on that was a perfect description of despair. What do I know? I'm just doing what I'm doing. I'm living my life to the best of my ability. My bicycle had a square wheel on the back. So what do you do when you get a rough ride? You pedal harder. I just did what I knew how to do. So the point that I'm trying to get to is that I was without a drink for 6 weeks. Then I went to treatment. 2 weeks into treatment, somebody asked me a question. I don't know how it is now, but when I was in treatment, you do what you got to do during the day, and then when everybody's supposed to be going to bed, a few of us go gather in the gay room, and that's where we have the best meeting of the whole day. We're just sitting there talking. Those of us that are really kind of get on to this idea of might want to get sober. And somebody asked me a question, and in answering that question, my moment of clarity arrived. And my understanding that I'm an alcoholic sounded like this. That was my moment of clarity arriving. Because I understood immediately from that point on, until about right now, that I was an alcoholic. And the focus for my life shifted 3 degrees. And now I understood why I was doing the things I was doing. I'm going to tell you the most humorous part of my drinking career, because this is the only one there is. The rest of it's not good. I figured out how to get a DUI from the back seat of a VW. And I got away with it. Because the judge looked at the officer and said, "Officer, you can only have one DUI per vehicle." So I got out of that DUI, and I got sent off to some counseling, which also started to get real, started to wake up something in my heart. Because see, I had no idea what my heart was talking about. I came into this thing, and for a long time, when I showed up in AA, I was John by God Wayne. Come on, bring it on. Right off. But then, and here's how it happened for me. The power of the steps changed in my life. Yep. I'm in. You know that Lipton tea commercial? I was in. When I had that moment of clarity, I was in. I didn't know how to go on from there, but by God, I'm in the pool. The headline of my fifth step that I knew would eventually be dealt with became public knowledge at about 6 months over. Oh, shit. And the thing I did, which is why I'm still here today, the thing I did is instead of running, I ran to AA. I ran to a guy, and I told him what was going on. He said, you need to go over there and have coffee with Jack. And I didn't know this, but Jack's sponsor called him up and said, you need to go have coffee with Dave. Okay. So this guy, Jack, shows up. Now, here's my first sponsor, Jack. Every time he shared, I am Jack, and I'm an alcoholic, and will be every day for the rest of my life. And as long as I keep going to a meeting a day and give $1 a day, I might be okay. That was one word. He opened every share with that. So I kind of believe Jack. And he was my first sponsor, and when I stopped drinking, the air tasted different. Which makes sense. I'm not pouring booze down my throat every day. And I mean, it was just rare air that I was experiencing being sober. And so he started working with me with steps 1, 2, and 3, very quickly. I figured out step 3 pretty easy because I remembered when I was 7, that I had the faith of a child. I had no problems with God, with whatever they were. It was just no problem. I believed. So now that I'm 36, much wiser and sophisticated and shit, and this third step of making the decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of I don't know what in the hell he is. I said, well, when I was 7, I didn't have any of that problem. So I said, in my heart, I'm going to be childlike. And that worked for me. It was my path. It worked for me. There was a time I had absolutely no questions and I was good to go, so I decided to just do that. My fourth step, it took me a while. It just took me a while because I have in that layer that's just really tough to push through. And what I was having a problem with pushing through was my fingerprints. My fingerprints on my life. I was having a hard time coming to terms with that. So it took me a while to work my way through step 4. Step 5, the experience that I want to share with you on that is, because I was eventually able to work my way through step 4 and just get it figured out. I love the 4 columns. I love the workshop here about the 4th step. Been there. And it was excellent. Absolutely excellent to take. You know, here's the deal. I got paperwork on the wall that says I'm really smart. I got paperwork in my drawer that says, no, you're not, Sparky. I'm trying to figure out how to do stuff. I get to this 5th step, and it just worked out very well. Because I had already had to deal with my headline. I'd already had to deal with the worst of me. So, the 5th step from that was, it was okay, when I hit the 6th and the 7th, I'm going to have to skip around a bit because 40 years of sobriety. One of the things that I did when I did my 4th step is I did the fears, I did the resentments, and then I was done. I hope you noticed that I have never done a 4th step on my sexual inventory. Didn't do it. Why? I don't know. I just didn't do it. The headline of my 5th step was sexual in nature. So when I got to that part, I just didn't do it. And I stayed that way. There you are. When I got to that part, I just moved on, and I figured out how to work my way through 6 and 7. I figured out how to do an amends with 8 and 9. Here's a wonderful way to make amends, and this worked wonderfully, and I'll tie in a little bit. The way to make an amends. I was a counselor in the Navy. My last duty station, I was a counselor. I was so happy to get that duty station that I was going to go do that in Newport, Rhode Island. And when I told Jack, my sponsor, that I got orders, I'm going to go be a counselor. He said, I hope you don't get drunk. I'm like, what? What? And it turns out that those of us who wear double hats, it's dangerous to be listening to somebody else's crap all day and then think I don't need to go to an AA meeting. I've been working it all day, right? No. I did learn that process of how to separate that. One of the things I picked up on is how to do a 9-step. And it's easy. The 8-step is where all the hard work is. That's where John by God Wayne has to be laid bare. And I got to figure out why I need to do a 9-step. And I have to go through my way of forgiveness. And I have to get humble with my own self and realize, you know what? When I was doing all that, I was doing the best I knew how. I don't believe anybody gets up first thing in the morning and says, well, how am I going to screw up my life today? We wake up thinking, I'm going to figure out how to do the best I can today. So I was given this deal of how to do a 9-step. First thing I got to tell somebody is exactly what I did wrong. Tell them exactly. Don't mix any words, because it's good for them to hear me acknowledge what I did. Second thing I have to tell them is how I feel about doing that. When I look back on what I did, so how do I feel about doing that? About my fingerprints being on that action. The third thing I got to tell them is what I have learned about myself. This is the act of amends. Sitting there looking at somebody. I got to tell them what I learned about myself. And then I got to tell them my commitment to the future. Should this ever arise, any situation like this, should it ever come up, this is my commitment of what I will do, and I am sorry. I apologize. And that's worked really well for me. It's worked on a spot amends. Had to do one with my wife, and I remembered that little 4-step process, and I worked my way through it, and we arrived at peace. And that's amazing. Absolutely amazing. My wife is the one that saved my life when I was 14 years sober. We got together, and she's got 33 years, and I've got 40. I just can't believe I get to say that. That's just amazing. I'm working my way through my life, and I'm just living life to the best of my ability by working the step. I came here at 14 years sober. Holy crap. I brought my little sober skeleton here with what I already had on it, and the muscles that you guys helped put on my skeleton were amazing. And I decided I need to do this again. So I came back the following, but I went for the next 18 years, mostly twice a year, because you know what I get here? When I come back, I get more. And when I come back the third time, I get more. And I found out the first time, have no expectations, okay. The second time, I kind of know what's going to go on, and I was wide open for a whole lot of experiences. And the experiences that you guys have fed me at my time here at The Rock, just absolutely amazing. I'm in Florida, and I get caught again watching porn. And my wife says, I'm done. I'm out of here. Unless you get treatment. Well, okay. You know, all the way back to when I joined in 83, I'll do whatever I need to do to get out of trouble. Okay. So I ended up finding my way into SA. And I've been with SA. So I find my way into SA. And they've got the exact same 12 steps. They changed one word. And it's the same 12 steps. So this time, there's a little white book they use. And in the white book, there's a phrase that talks about those of you who have experienced success in other programs need to do the steps as if you've never done them. So I did. And this time, when I got up to step 9, when I worked my way through step 9, I arrived at 34 years sober in SA, and I'm confused as hell. I'm comfortable because they use the 12 steps. Same 12 steps. How did I end up never knowing that I was a card-carrying member of another 12-step program. I eventually figured it out. It's because I am who I am. That's who I am. So when I got to the ninth step this time, what exactly did I do wrong with who? How do I feel about this? And I worked that ninth step. And for the first time in my life, all of it, I comprehended the word serenity. And I would just get through, and I would just get peace. I came to know peace. Because for me, it took that long. It took that long for my heart to get done. I can't thank you guys enough. You fill my heart. And I'm so glad to be here. Love you guys.